You're listening to Triple M's very own All Aussie Show Homegrown. I'm Cassie, and I'm very excited to be joined by the Living End's frontman, the shredder at the front, Mr. Chris Chaney. Now, Chris, what drives the band?
We wanted to be a kick-ass live band because we looked up to the Oils and AC/DC and Cold Chisel and all those, you know, seminal kind of Aussie bands who were just so powerful. We wanted to be, and we still do, you know, want to be as good as that. And I just remember going to see bands and stuff and being blown away. It was everything to me back then.
Now, have you found that because you are of that age, that you've got this new generation of bands that have been influenced by the Living End, like you were influenced by Midnight Oil?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, we've got the Bennies supporting us at the moment on the road. They make a point of saying every night how their first gig that they went to was the Living End and the first album they bought was the Living End, which is really flattering. It kind of makes you feel like you're getting a little older. But yeah, we do get that a lot these days. And it's funny because I remember going up to Lee Barnes at the old Olympic Park, I think it was the Glass House, in, you know, 1986. And now we're kind of like friends. You know, he got up and played with us a few weeks ago, and it's so weird. It just blows my mind. And so now we get bands coming up to us, you know, and we were their favourite band when they were just starting out in high school. And it's amazing to have that influence and to have that reach.
And as you said, you are on tour with the Bennies at the moment, and there is this really strong punk scene that's coming from Australia. I think 100% it's the Living End influence. It's all those kids that, like you said, their first record was the Living End. Their first show was the Living End.
To me, 1997 or whatever it was, 98, when we first kind of, when the first album kind of exploded, it doesn't feel like that long ago, but I suppose it is. It's like a generation ago now. There was a whole bunch of us, like, you know, Body Jar and Area 7 and all that, and, you know, all these bands that we were just playing the tote from one week to the next. And you know, we've managed to kind of to break through to a different level, I suppose. And we all wanted the same thing, you know. We all played the same crappy venues and used the same crappy gear and all that. And but I feel like, you know, as much as we're lucky, I feel like it's probably going to sound arrogant, but I always feel like I wanted it more. I was always really like, you know, how come we can't be headlining? How come we're not on the main stage? Why are those people walking away and watching that other band, you know? So there was always this kind of, you know, ambition to be better, and this sort of, this hunger and this jealousy of bands that were doing better. So maybe that's part of it too.
Now that you are that band that is headlining the main stage, that people aren't leaving the stage to watch, they're actually sticking around and watching you, how does that feel?
Well, it's amazing, you know. I mean, we had a photographer come with us on this tour to document the tour. And I was scanning through some photos the other day and just seeing the look on people's faces in the audience. I mean, I remember when we first went to, like, Newcastle, for example, and we played with Blink-182 and I forget, it was, I think the other band that was on the bill, Josh Pike was in. It was his first sort of high school band or something. But I remember playing that show and there was hardly anyone there because no one cared about Blink-182 at this point either. And there was probably like 20 kids or something. It was probably an afternoon show and they were just sitting on the floor at the back while we were playing. I remember them just looking at us like, what the hell is this? You know, this, like, this double bass thing, this guy playing these, like, you know, 50s rock and roll kind of guitar solos. I just felt like, oh man, we're the daggiest band on the planet. These people and kids are never going to get into what we're doing. People are never going to get it. And so now, looking at these photos the other day and like this sold out tour and seeing the look on people's faces, I just think, I can't believe that it actually worked, that it actually all turned around and exploded the way that it did. So I get really kind of like, not emotional about it, but I feel so lucky that we've had the career that we've had, and now we're like this band that everyone kind of knows. But for years we you know, scrimped and saved and struggled just to get from one gig to the next.
Do you think that hitting up those regional towns and visiting those venues and those areas that people don't really go to, why do you think it's so important to do that? Because it costs a bit more and it could be cheaper just to play the capital cities.
Well, we just want to play. That's the first thing, is we didn't form a band so we could just do one or two shows and count the cash. You know, we wanted to just play as many shows as we could, to as many people as we could. And I feel a certain loyalty to those areas as well, because since we kind of broke through, we've always done well in those markets. And I think they're kind of starved for music. And I just like the idea of going and connecting with those people. And there's a real appreciation that I think perhaps you don't get sometimes in the cities, because we're so spoiled here. So there's a lot of different reasons.
Now, Chris, you have been pretty busy. You did have a small stint in American Idiot, the musical, which was the Green Day musical. How was that for you?
Nerve-wracking. But it was an incredible experience. I'm so glad that I did it. I was dreading it going in. I'd agreed to do it, and then I started having these major sort of anxiety attacks, thinking, why have I signed on for this? What are you doing? What do you think, you're a theatre star or something? And I was like, oh, God, I'm really nervous about this now. I don't know what's involved. I don't know how much dialogue there is. I don't know, you know, what the cast is going to be like, what the theatre is going to be like. So, yeah, I was really kind of apprehensive. But I tell you what, like after I just did the first week, and I didn't want to leave. I was like, this has been one of the best experiences that I've ever had, because the people were so lovely that I worked alongside in the cast. The show was really good. It was really kind of gritty and loud, and, you know, it wasn't a soft theatre show on any level. And I think just because, you know, you need to challenge yourself in what I do, you know, or any kind of artist, I think, you know, you need to throw yourself out of that comfort zone. And I was really, you know, in the deep end with this. And so everything that I thought I should be afraid of ended up being what I'd embraced. It was just such an incredible experience, and so different to anything I've done before.
Do you reckon you'd do it again if you were asked?
If it was the right kind of role and I felt that I could, you know, bring what I do. Because I'm not going to step too far outside of sort of who I am. I mean, I don't claim to be an actor on any level. Then maybe I'd consider it.
You guys are nicking off again overseas. What's planned for the rest of the year?
We're back here in October, I think, to play some shows with Midnight Oil.
Sounds good. Well, look, we'll have to hold out until later this year to make sure we do see you guys live with your idols, Midnight Oil, which will be amazing. So thank you so much for the chat, Chris.